If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
You use a book to curl up with on a cold winter's night, and we still have plenty of them to come. And we read at WGN Radio, Steve and Bob and Dave and Dave and all of us here, and I. Sarah Tiemann is on our marketing and promotions team. She's our PR manager at WGN Radio and promotions manager. And she's that famous lady we put on every now and then who reads 100 books a year and then talks to us periodically about them. We decided to form a book club, and every month we now are telling you what we're reading and why. Among the books I'm reading, Hacking Planet Earth, How Geoengineering Can Help Us Reimagine the Future. I'm almost done with Share the Memoir, Part 1. It's amazing. Letters by Oliver Sacks, the famous doctor and writer whose letters have been now published. And The Mesopotamian Riddle, An Archaeologist, a Soldier, a Clergyman, and the Race to Decipher the World's Oldest Writing is not as wonky as it sounds. I've really been enjoying that. But what was the book of the year, and what are some of our new recommendations? Okay, Sarah, you're on. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Pretty good.
Happy January and happy reading.
So, yeah, I said we decided to form a book club. By that, I mean you decided we would form a book club and make us write summaries and turn in our book reports every month. Am I right about that?
Yeah, we had an idea to kind of launch something, and I was kind of like, you know what, let me spearhead this and let me hound you all every month, because it's fun to, you know, put out there what you're reading. I think as a reader, reading is often a very solitary pastime. And it's nice to find a community out there of people who, you know, are fellow readers, whether you join a book club and get ideas from that and, you know, discuss things, or, you know, have an exchange of ideas. So that's what I like, kind of what we're fostering here. Hopefully that, you know, our exchange of ideas, we're giving each other ideas of what to read. And I love that exchange of how, you know, I'll have said I read something and then, you know, Steve Alexander picks it up, or you're reading Cher and that's on my hold list right now at the library. So it's, you know, kind of like fun to see how all that trickles down. And, you know, maybe we inspire you to pick something up, or, you know, find community in what we are sharing. So
let's cut to the chase then. So my book of the year was The Wide, Wide Sea, Imperial Ambition, First Contact, and the Fateful Final Voyage of Captain James Hook. We interviewed the author more than once, and I just think he's a terrific writer. Very fun book. It's swashbuckling fun. It's amazing. It's amazing. The Wide, Wide Sea by Hampton Sides, 2024. That was my book of the year. You and Steve Alexander had the same book for the book of the year. What was yours? Oh, pardon me.
I
don't mean to misquote Steve. He said his top picks for the year were James by Percival Everett, but his other one was your book of the year.
Right. Well, so I'm kind of in the Steve Alexander camp. It's hard to pick just one. So every year I boil it down to 10. I boiled it down a little bit even further on our post for January. So I put Sipsworth. It's great. A quick, easy read, I would say. It tackles themes of loneliness, aging, friendship, and, you know, if you want something that you're not just going to get bogged down on, it's actually a rather short book. I think it's about 200 pages, and it's heartwarming, and I think it'll, you know, leave you with, if you're looking for a feel-good feeling, I would pick up Sipsworth.
Really? Sipsworth,
yes.
By Simon Van Bowie,
B-O-O-I. Correct. Yeah, and it's actually the only book I struggle to go back and reread things, although I do occasionally. And there's a few on my list that I'll probably reread for this year. But it's the only book I read in 2024, first as an audiobook, because it's the first way I was able to consume it, and then second reading it when I visited a local bookstore and picked up a copy. So it gets a special distinction from my 2024. But other ones I put on the list, if you're a historical fiction fan, definitely recommend picking up The Women by Kristen Hanna. It goes into chronicles the story of a nurse who ended up going to the Vietnam War and her kind of the after her in the war and then the aftermath feeling after that.
That's Women.
Lisa Dent read that book too. Yes, that's The Women. If you, for my romance fans out there, I don't read a ton of romance. I used to back in the day. So to honor that hopeless romantic, you know, high schooler that I once was, thinking I'd never find somebody, pick up This Summer Will Be Different by Carly Fortune. I partly love that book because it's set in Prince Edward Island. And, you know, my heroine girl is Anne. Anne of Green Gables, so gotta love a book set on Prince Edward Island.
You also have on your list The Personal Librarian, All the Colors of the Dark, and you've got Amor Towles on there, Table for Two Fictions. Anything Amor Towles writes is a big hit at my house.
Oh, yeah. His A Gentleman in Moscow, that was Steve Alexander's list that you just read. I read Personal Librarian, I think, in 22, but yes. Amor Towles, if you're going to read anything by Amor Towles, I would start with, if that's a new author to you, I would start with A Gentleman in Moscow. Yeah. That is my favorite Amor Towles book. But in terms of nonfiction, because I'm a little bit of a different soul that I do cross over and read, I almost had an even split of nonfiction and fiction, but Your Wide, Wide Sea made my top 10. You know, as the one of my other pastimes is traveling, I always want to do more of it and try to do as much of it as I can. But it's interesting to, you know, to think that once upon a time, nobody knew of a Hawaii, right? Or, you know, obviously the people who lived in Hawaii knew of a Hawaii, but Europeans, when they set out, were like, what is this land? So reading that book and seeing the, you know, first time discovery of these lands, I understood it from the perspective of as a fellow traveler, that you're, you know, going to a place for the first time and, you know, being awestruck by what that place offers. But also conversely, you know, when they land and I think it might be somewhere else in the tropical islands. I can't think of where, but they release all the rats. And now, you know, that it's sort of the aftermath of the destruction. So I think it's an interesting book of, you know, the good and the bad.
And that and the title of that book is?
The Wide, Wide Sea.
About that, I said, learning was never so fun. I didn't have to get scurvy or anything. Although Cook was he didn't know exactly that citrus, the vitamin C, would keep you from getting scurvy, but he was smart and conscientious enough to pack enough of the right kinds of food that his men didn't generally succumb to scurvy. They succumbed to other things, maybe each other or the islanders in Hawaii.
Right.
I've talked about that book before. One of the most amazing scenes is when they were having some sort of celebration on the Hawaiian Islands for one of their gods, and then what appears on the horizon but these big ships with huge white masts. And when Cook arrived, they thought he was a god or the god.
Yeah.
And you know, there was nothing that they couldn't offer him. And eventually they overstayed their welcome and then they killed him. But but can you imagine? I mean, it would be almost like here in America today if a spaceship landed and we go, holy cow, it's these aliens. They could not comprehend what had washed ashore.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I, in 24, I traveled to Alaska and Hawaii. And I was on the Big Island in Hawaii, and I was in that bay I saw the monument where Cook is buried.
Wow.
So when I got to that port part of the book and they're talking about the sacred hill, because that's a very sacred area on the Big Island. In fact, you're not allowed to step on, like, our tour boat that we were on, because it was a snorkel tour. We were not allowed to, like, step foot on the Cook Island, you know, where the monument is. But just like having been to those places and kind of followed in the footsteps of Cook and like the Turnagain Bay and then reading about it in that book, I love when, you know, life, you're like, I know where this is, or I like went to this and I get that. So I love reading those books where it sort of puts a new perspective on it for you. The Challenger, if you're also a science fiction and, you know, well, real life sci-fi and history, read The Challenger by Adam Hickenbotham. His best book to me is for sure the, oh, now I'm going to forget what it's called, and I never do that.
It's the Chernobyl book.
Yes, thank you. Midnight
in
Chernobyl.
It's Bob jumping
thank
in
you,
here.
Bob yes. Kessler. Yes, thank you, Bob Kessler. That, to me, is his best book because he writes nonfiction like fiction. But the one takeaway from Challenger, every time, like every couple pages, they use the phrase acceptable risk. And what is acceptable risk to put human lives at stake? And I think weighing that the gravitas of acceptable risk when it comes to human life is an interesting thought to ponder.
Well, and that's about the space shuttle, the Challenger. And it's ironic you mentioned that. A couple of our listeners have reminded me that, well, today is the anniversary of the blizzard of 67 in Chicago. It's also the anniversary of Ed White, Art Chafee, and Gus Grissom dying in that exercise in NASA, the greatest tragedy in the history of NASA, was January 27th, 1967. The same day we were getting snowed in, they died by a fire in an Apollo command module. By the way, we did just now hear...
And that book does talk about that, too.
Oh, does it really?
It goes, which was interesting to me, because it goes into... It's not just about the Challenger, so it's everything leading up to the Challenger. So you learn about those other space missions and... everything else, and you know, the humanity of those astronauts too, because obviously I was in grade school when that exploded, and it was a big deal. I remember watching in you know, in Lake Zurich, and having, like, because, you know, Sally Ride, the teacher. So it's interesting that the painting he paints writes about, like, that whole initiative and why we sent a teacher into space too. So very interesting if that topic, or if you want to learn more about that subject.
Sarah Taman is our promotions and PR manager here at WGN Radio. So our books of the year include The Wide, Wide Sea by Hampton Sides. The gang also very much liked Sipsworth. James gets mentions for Best Of. Here's a text message from one of our listeners. Hey, John, I'm looking forward to hearing from Sarah today. She was one of our favorite students. She was always kind and ready to help anyone who needed it. She is a responsible citizen, and her teachers, especially government, civics, and English, are so proud of her. Best wishes,
aww,
Sarah. I don't know who wrote that. Maybe you do, but isn't that nice to hear?
That's lovely.
Talking to Sarah Taman. She's our promotions manager at WGN. She's our book friend, among other things. John, thank you for having Sarah on regularly. She's inspiring. I put a couple of requests on hold at my local library. This one says, please repeat the title of the romance she recommended. What was that book, Sarah?
It is This Summer Will Be Different by Carly Fortune.
John, read Sipsworth. I read it when it was recommended a while ago on your show, and I just loved it. And we didn't even mention Bob Kessler's favorite book. What was your book of the year, Bob?
Well, first of all, let me say, I just finished Sipsworth, and I hope they make a movie on it. It's so good.
Isn't it Sipsworth
beautiful? Sipsworth is delightful, yes.
Hey, you guys, give me a sentence. What is that book about?
An elderly woman adopts and cares for a mouse. It sounds ridiculous. Someone here in the newsroom just said, oh, God. It's a great movie.
That might have been me. Really? I'm going to enjoy this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you will. And you'll come away from it saying, I hope they make a movie out of this.
My wife liked the book, too. Yes. Bob, what was your book of the year?
The book of the year, the best fiction I read was Peace Like a River by Leif Enger, who is a Midwest author I had never heard of. The book is more than 20 years old, and it's about a family where one family member is accused of killing someone in self-defense, and then the adventure goes on from there. But I discovered, it's more about the discovery of this author, so I picked up his most recent book, I Cheerfully Refuse, because there was a sailboat on the cover. And it's this future post-apocalyptic thing, and it's not a bad book, but it was not nearly as good as Peace Like a River. So I feel like I've discovered this author that, and then I go to talk to friends and they, oh, I've read that and they've heard of him. So I'm a little late to the Leif Anger party, but I now have other, So Brave, Young, and Handsome is what I'm going to read from him.
Got it.
But next.
To repeat. Peace Like a River
came out
in 2001,
yes.
Leif Anger. And while that's not a new book, it's the book you read this year that you enjoyed the most.
Yes.
Fiction.
Yes, from last year.
Keep going.
And then nonfiction was Ricky Ian Gordon, Seeing Through, A Chronicle of Sex, Drugs, and Opera. It is very detailed, deep dive into all three of those subjects, sex, drugs, and opera. So buckle up. I know Ricky because he composed Grapes of Wrath, the opera that I got to play in.
Oh, that's right.
And
Carnegie Hall.
He really is one of my favorite people. He's kind of like Mr. Rogers, and he always wants to make you feel good. And that's his natural predilection, but he definitely had a rough life. He's in his 60s now, and he goes into he's very open. He's one of the most open people I know. So he'll tell you everything, and this book tells you everything. So I keep reminding people, buckle up. It's detailed, but I was reading it and was like, what am I reading? And then I finished it and I was like, wow, that was really something.
Wow.
Worth reading. Yes.
And Seeing Through, A Chronicle of Sex, Drugs, and Opera by Ricky Ian Gordon.
Yes. And I've read other musician memoirs before, musicians I know or admire, and they're not always great, but this one really was.
I couldn't sleep last night, so I just stayed up and read about 70 pages of that Cher memoir. I'm always skipping around, and they're famous now. I Got You, Babe was a song that he woke her up in the middle of the night twice and said, how about this? And she looked at it and goes, nah, that's a stupid song. And then she said, you need to do this, this, and this. And so then he said, okay, I'll do this, this, and this. Wakes her up a couple of hours later. And she goes, okay, that's better. But they never thought it would amount to anything. And it didn't hit until they went to England. You know, she would wear fashions that she designed. She never wore short skirts. Beautiful gal, very thin. She weighed 109 pounds. The beautiful hair, striking appearance. But Sonny would not let her wear short skirts. So she always wore pants, outfits, and things that she designed herself. And then he wore the kind of furry vest and had that Roman kind of mop top haircut of his. And a lot of people looked at them and said, they're tramps. This is a non-talent look. It's not what everybody else looks like. And they were told, go to England, sing your songs there. And when they landed in England, it was like the Beatles landing here. It was mobs of people that wanted to hear them sing I Got You, Babe. And they launched in England and then came back here to great acclaim. And Sonny was so controlling. You think of Cher as kind of a strident, righteous, funny, smart lady. She was 18 years old when she's living with him. He's in his 30s and is controlling her because he is her ticket. Does that sound like Elvis and Tom Parker or who? I don't know, but it's pretty crazy. And what an Sonny was sufficiently talented. I'll say that, sufficiently talented. But it was awful, I think, the way he managed her personal life. And that's the share. Yeah, so you're in for that, Sarah. And that's just two pages.
Yes.
That's two pages.
Yeah,
that I described.
It's a two-parter. Yeah. My problem is there's so much delicious things out there. And when you read to the volume that I do, I can't get everything straight away. So I just play the long game at the library. And then I.
Oh, yeah, you're waiting for that book. Yeah.
Yeah, I borrow my husband's holds. And then I realize that all of this stuff hits at once. In fact, I went to the library over the weekend and I thought I only had two books ready, and I have like five books ready. So it's going to be a fast flurry, and I have 10 on my shelf, about three I'm currently reading, actually four if I count the one on my Kindle. So two timely ones that I'm need to dive into and start, if I may.
I'm out of time this time, Sarah, so you're going to join us again. This is January. We'll do this every month in February. We'll shoot for the first weekend. We're at the end of January, so let's shoot for give everybody a month to catch up. Let's reconvene at the end of February, and we'll talk about our February books, okay?
Sounds good. And if I can just remind all of our listeners, if you missed any of these titles, you can go back to wgnradio.com/books. And you'll see the list that we've posted for the past I think it goes back to like August is when we started sharing our titles. So if you missed anything, most likely it's going to be on a past list there too. And you can see everybody's recommendations of what they're reading.
WGNradio.com/books. Sarah, John, you should have her on more often, says 630. This is you and the crew at the best. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing what you're doing. We'll talk to you next month.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.